Welcome one and all once again to Dual Wielding episode 125. Joining me this week we have Martin.
Hello.
And we have Daniel.
Greets.
So as always, December is such a dry time for actual video game news. And we have been, it's also a dry time for new releases, so we've been playing, I guess, a bunch of old stuff or catching up on our backlog, so we'll kick it off with that. It seems like Martin has the most to talk about, so take it away.
Well, I have the most to talk about, but most of it is actually complaining about stuff. I have my PlayStation 4, and one of the games I picked up is Battlefield 4, because I really enjoy the multiplayer portion of these games. And I have a game, from what I got to play, the multiplayer is still really good and really fun. The problem is, the game was released in such a bad state, it crashes all the time, there are sound bugs, so basically on conquest maps you sometimes don't have any sound except the sounds of your own gun. Then there is this problem that for some reason sometimes your single player saves just corrupts. And now the game also already had two patches and most of the problems are still not fixed. I think the crashes all actually got worse for me. The other problem is if you got Battlefield Premium and already have the first map pack, or the first two if you are on Xbox One, the problem is the server browser also doesn't work, and you need that to actually play on the new maps, because if you do a quick search with the playlists, that only searches for the maps that actually come with the game. So as soon as you go in the server browser and do like a few filter options to actually look for the maps you want to play, apparently there are no servers, which is of course wrong. Or servers show up, but only servers with no playing on the no one playing on them, and the servers which actually have people on them don't show up. It's really weird, and actually really bad. And my plan right now is to actually get my money back for PlayStation Premium, which some Xbox One people already have been successful with.
I will say this much: at least for EA, this is one of their this is one of their lesser evils in recent memory, so that's a step up for them, I guess.
Yeah, it's still pretty awful. It's not just the next-gen versions which have problems. It's across the board. This game is kind of a disaster.
Mess, yeah. And you would think, I mean, it's weird, especially after the Sim fiasco. Or it was this year, too.
Hey, guess what, guys? There was a Battlefield 4, quote, beta, unquote.
Yep.
What use was that?
I think that actually was an alpha, and we're now in beta.
Ridiculous.
That's my assumption.
Honestly, and we know, DICE admits all the time, you know, the beta's an old build, we're not going to update the beta, so what's the point? What is the point running a beta that close to the release? If it's an old build anyway, and you're not going to update it, and if anything, when the game actually comes out, it's worse than the beta.
I don't know. I mean, there have already been rumblings about this game being pushed out earlier than some QA people would have suggested, but they already had the date there and they wanted to be out before Call of Duty, so they might have taken some shortcuts.
EA taking shortcuts? No, that's never happened before, has it? No, I don't believe that. No, can't, not possible.
Because I think this launch is probably even worse than Battlefield 3 was. I mean, I played Battlefield 3 on PS3 and didn't really have any issues with the game. I heard about PC people having some problems with the game, but nothing to the extent this game has.
Well, I mean, to kind of, I'm not going to really play devil's advocate. I would just say, you know, they also had the problem of trying to launch this on five platforms at once. Granted, we've seen a lot of other games do that. Yeah, but you want that launch time money, because you want launch money and you want that
Sadly,
fall.
That's an excuse. Not a good one.
No, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying that's, you know, that's what they are. It's like, and we are in this mentality now where you can kind of ship it and patch it where But the problem with that is that people kind of accept ship it and patch it if you do it in a reasonable time. This would have been about, I think, what, 6 or 7 weeks since they launched the PS3 and 360 version,
yep.
and about a month since they launched the PS4 and the Xbox One version. So it's been quite some time now, and at some point people are going to give up on trying to get it online. Because it's not just, you know, it's not like a one-off experience. It's not just people in Europe. It's not just people in the States. It's something that's been hampering everybody's experience. I had a couple of people I've tweeted this weekend about trying to play and not being able to get into any games whatsoever.
Yeah.
And
not only that, is like
single
player
is good enough to make up for the shortcomings.
And in this day and age, you know, you sort of, if you're not Nintendo, your first week, month of sales are the most important. And right now, you know, everyone's just going to go, don't bother buying the game, it doesn't work. And we're a month and a half into it, you know?
Yep.
Well, I think that's
one. Especially when you're trying to sell DLC on top of the game from the outset as well.
Yep.
Yeah, I think in the long run, that's going to be the bigger issue, is that people are just going to move on. Because how much do you want to invest in a game that doesn't work before you just say, screw it, I'll get something else, or I'll play something else?
Yeah. Currently, mostly I've been playing actually the free-to-play titles that are available on PS4. Like Warframe or War Thunder. Because those actually work.
And how are those? What have you played?
So, the other big thing I've played, so just to continue with the complaining, is NBA 2K14. Which... I have to say, I'm not a sports game guy. I played some basketball games back in the day. I think the last simulation one was probably NBA Courtside 2001 on the GameCube.
Wow, that is old school. Yeah, that is old school.
Yeah. So it took me some time to get into the game. But the thing is, from a gameplay perspective, I think the game is actually really, really good. It also looks really good on the PlayStation 4. The player models are just fantastic, I think. And I've been really enjoying the career mode, where you get these cutscenes and can have, in some cases, have like a Mass Effect conversation wheel where you can make decisions in your career and stuff like that. All of that is really cool. The big problem this game has is the virtual currency. Everything in this game is dedicated by the virtual currency, and you earn it by playing games, usually. The problem is, what you earn by playing a game is really not enough to make the progression in it in any way enjoyable. In my career, in one match, I earn like, I've been playing on the lowest difficulty because, like I said, I'm not a sports game guy, so I earn a little bit less. So I earn like 100 to 200 VC. That gets me maybe one stat point in one of 50 categories, which is not doesn't make much of a difference. And if I wanted to buy like something simple, let's say shoes, those might cost 4,000 VC, and then there are actually items that can modify your stats, and those might cost like 5,000 VC and up. So if you just would concentrate on the career, maybe it isn't that bad, but the progression is really, really slow. And the problem is the VC is also used if you play the MyGM mode. So you play the general manager mode and you want to train your guys. Well, pay some VC. You want better training facilities. Pay with VC. You want to play the My Team mode, in which you, which is basically like FIFA Ultimate Team and buy packs with players. Hey, pay some VC. And of course, if you want to play all three modes at the same time, there's no way you're earning enough to have enough fun in all of these modes. So what do you have to do? There's this nice option in the game where you can pay real money to get VC.
Oh, I didn't see that one coming.
That's what I was going to ask.
It's disgusting. Basically, maybe if you play just one game mode, it's fine. But if you play two or three at the same time in any capacity, it's just a really bad grind. I mean, you don't find videos on YouTube for nothing that are just like, hey, this is the easiest way to grind some VC out without spending too much time. There's like this GM thing you can do. So you start a new season and go, simulate the season and get like 700 VC out of it. And you do that every 5 minutes and grind it out. But that's not fun. Yeah, and it's also the reason why I'm going to sell the game, because I didn't feel like the progression was particularly a fun one, and it, after a while it was just grind.
That's probably my biggest gripe with games nowadays, is like they have a messed up progression, and then it's going to mess up even more by, oh, you couldn't give us $5 to speed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So stupid. I'm paying $60 for the game anyway. You know, in this country, we're paying £50, which is like $80, $90. It's ridiculous.
€70 for us. Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I'm already scared for like games like MLB The Show, that was coming out, I guess March probably, right? Well, when does baseball season begin and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. There's already been like this pre-order offer. Hey, pre-order now and you get some bonus virtual currency. Apparently this game is also going that direction. Which is a really disturbing trend for sport games, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, on the same hand, and again, I feel like I'm just the publisher's defender of this show. It seems like such smart money for a sports game, because the people who play sports games are the type of people who probably, oh, you play sports game? So they either won't mind the grind, or they're like, oh, I can get a heads up on my friends if I pay this much money up front and kind of get my character, you know.
Oh, of course it's smart from a business standpoint, but it's really shady in a full-price product. And on top of it, for me, now that I've seen this and experienced it, I'm not going to touch another of the games. Except if I hear they have taken that stuff out. That's it.
Okay. Is there any game that you've been playing this week that you are happy with?
Yes. I played a little bit of LEGO Marvel Super Heroes, and that game is incredibly fun. I also think that it runs really well on the PS4, I have to say. I think it's probably 60 frames per second, even in split screen, which is really cool. I played like the first hour, I think, or something like that. And it's probably one of the funniest games they've ever done. I mean, the humor, I think, has even more hits than misses than LEGO Batman 2. They're doing some cool stuff with the heroes, I think, with their abilities and stuff. For example, I really love what they've done with Mr. Fantastic and how he just morphs into all kinds of weird things to interact with stuff in the environment. For example, in one case, he like transformed into big scissors to cut through something and stuff like that. So yeah, they're doing really cool stuff with these heroes, and also have to say the boss fight, actually the one boss fight I experienced so far, has been pretty cool actually. That's not something I thought of previous LEGO games, and also think that, what did I want to say? Oh, I've forgotten. Shit.
He doesn't know what to say when he isn't complaining about a game.
Yeah, I wanted to say something else. No, I've forgotten. Damn it!
Does it have any type of virtual currency?
No, it doesn't. And it actually came with free stuff in it, with some new figurines for you to play with from
Yeah.
the four stuff.
Have to say, most companies are smart enough to avoid doing the virtual currency stuff in kids' games on consoles. They do it on smartphones with no problem. But what you do now is you do the action figures, so.
I really appreciate that Lego is this good about their pricing in general. I mean, the game's also pretty much always cheaper than the other games, and they don't do microtransaction in any weird way and stuff like that. So yeah, that's also pretty good. Then I also played some Warframe, Warthunder, other free-to-play games on PS4. Both pretty good, I have to say, but I don't want to talk too long alone, and people can probably try them out themselves because they are free.
They are free to play.
Yeah, they
Okay,
have
Daniel,
preferences.
what have you been playing?
I bought SteamWorld Dig and Gunman Clive off the eShop, and I'm actually kind of surprised at how good they both are, actually. I was looking at a playthrough for SteamWorld Dig on PC, and I was like, I don't. Like, now that I have a 3DS and I have loads of games on it, I don't really want to be tied to my computer to play a game. Like, especially a game like that, where you can just pick it up and play it for a little bit and then put it down. So I bought it on the eShop despite it being a little bit more expensive, and it's actually very addictive. I think I'm at the end because the reviews that I said that I w read, they say that the game sort of ends just as it gets started. And I'm at a boss fight, so I think I'm at the end of the game. But it's really like there's not a lot to it. Basically, you're given a pickaxe and there's a mine, and you can go and mine stuff at your own pace, and you can make your own paths, and sometimes you get stuck, and sometimes you get put in really sort of hairy situations that you have to get out of. And you don't really do much else other than that. There are some rooms that require sort of more intricate sort of platforming knowledge in order to do them, because they're kind of puzzles, and if you die you go straight back to the beginning of the room. But it's really weird how little there is to it, but how addictive it is. You just spend half an hour just mining, and you've got see on the bottom of the screen that you've got $800 worth of stuff, and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna take that back, and then on the way back you die, and it's like, oh shit, you know. So that's really cool. And I bought Gunman Clive because it was £2, and I thought, you know what, it's £2. So, even if I don't like it that much, it was £2. And it's a really cool, stylistic Mega Man tribute. And the graphics in it are really cool. Like, everything's kind of like a. It's kind of like a cartoon, but where you can only see the outlines of things. Like, everything else is coloured in the same colour. It's kind of weird. And for £2, it's really fun. It's not very long, but it's
But it's
great
two
for.
pounds.
It's £2, you know. Who, you know. So, I highly recommend both of them, actually. And I wish there were more games on the eShop like it instead of all the shovelware that's on there.
I have also played Gunman Clive, and I think it's really good.
Yeah.
It really emulates Mega Man well, I have to say.
And it's not like as hardcore as Mega Man, so you can if you're
It
not.
has its tough parts, so.
Yeah, it has tough parts, but it's not like consistently hard like Mega
Yeah.
Man is. And it's nice if you like if you, it's kind of if you want to try out a Mega Man game, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
They're great. I wish there was more games like that on the 3DS eShop because and if they are, then Nintendo needs to work on like the discoverability because I cannot find them in there. I've also I've been playing Shadow Warrior a bit because I've that well since I got Pokemon and Ace Attorney 5, I've kind of fell out with playing games on my PC, and I've been using Shadow Warrior to sort of and Sonic and Sega Allstars Racing Transformed to sort of get back in there, but it's kind of fruitless because I'm going home for Christmas and I'm not going to have my PC with me. But yeah, that I reminded myself how good that game is when you're not fighting a boss, because the boss fights, they're not terrible, but they're not fun. And I've been, the last couple of days, I've just been playing around with SteamOS and being incredibly disappointed with it.
seems like you aren't the O you are.
No, well, it seems to me like if you are a... Okay, let's put it this way. Unless you have a machine dedicated to it that has an NVIDIA graphics card in it, and you don't want to use that machine for anything else, then... And you don't mind spending a few hours trying to mess around getting it to work, then by all means try SteamOS. But otherwise, if you're just a sort of a moderately interested person, don't even try, because it's not a pretty thing. It's not a functional thing. It doesn't, like, it wipes your computer clean. So obviously, if you have to use that computer for something, it's not worth it. And
yeah. For Valve, beta really does mean beta.
Well, it's not even... SteamOS isn't even beta, because it's not SteamOS. What it is an OS with Steam. That's all it is right now. Okay. Which is why I'm disappointed with it. It feels like, to me, Valve sort of... that somebody at Valve was like, so we announced this hardware and our operating system, and now the big consoles are out. We kind of have to show something, don't we? And everyone's like, yeah, we really do. So they sort of just pushed something out of the door, like what they had at the time. So, yeah, what it is just, if you know anything about Linux, it's a very bare bones, and I mean very bare bones, Linux install, and you click a button and it launches Steam. And that's about it. Yeah, it's not a pretty thing. I'm looking forward to see how it evolves. I hope that Valve makes it what it could be, which is, you know, you sign in, like, Steam everywhere. You sign in with your Steam account, and it signs you into the computer. Then you get the Steam Big Picture interface with some extra enhancements. Yeah. And if you want, you can go back to a desktop, and the desktop still has your Steam friends wherever you are, and you can manage your games from a more desktop-friendly interface. But right now, it's just Linux with Steam, with a Steam client installed.
I mean, they still have lots of time, I think.
They pretty much run on their own schedule. They don't have to beat anything to the punch.
Well, I think they plan to at least have these Steam machines out next year, I think. Right? That's what I understood.
But they've got a lot of work to do, because currently, I know Valve have made their own internal changes to the way Linux works to get more performance out of it. Mm. But currently, their performance changes are not providing any more performance when you run it on bog standard Ubuntu or anything. So they need to do a lot of work to the operating system, but. They have infinite amounts of time.
Yeah, they will probably... I mean, Valve is always on their own
schedule.
They will take the time they need.
Yeah, and they're very iterative. They iterate a lot on what they do, so...
Yeah.
Just right now, it just feels like you could have waited a lot more to release this, because they have a guide out for people who want to install it, and it's just like, by that, you're kind of recommending, almost...
Yeah.
That you install it, and it's not worth installing, because you don't get the performance out of it. It's a pain in the ass to install, and you need to dedicate a machine at the moment with very specific hardware to it. So I think they released it prematurely, way too prematurely. And obviously there's people complaining that, oh, it wiped my computer. So
I mean maybe they wanted to get it out because they had the hardware prototypes ready, and I think they promised to send them out this year.
Well, I don't know, because they could have not released, just simply not released. They've given whoever gets a box, one of the Steam boxes, which, by the way, comes in this awesome wooden box. PC that comes inside it. I want that wooden box.
I'm more impressed with the box the thing came in than the box itself.
I want that wooden box. They gave everybody a USB stick to recover from, so they could have... I mean, yeah, it would have leaked, but they could have just said, look, we've given them the operating system because they need it. They have a box. But we don't recommend you install it because it's just not done.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking, but they probably have an idea.
How is playing games on the OS? Or...
As far as I've seen, I haven't been able to do it myself because there isn't a single computer in the house that will run SteamOS. And I can't do it through a virtual machine, which is how I'm running SteamOS at the moment. From what I've seen, obviously the performance isn't there yet, but you can still do it. I mean, if you run a source game, you should be fine because they don't have very high hardware requirements. And everyone that got a Steam Box, as far as I'm aware, got very expensive hardware in there. So, I mean, it's definitely possible. It just, at the moment, isn't no different from doing it on your regular Linux computer.
Yeah, because it's, from the experience, from what I've seen, it's basically just Steam Big Picture mode on a Linux machine. And, of course, you can only play the games that already have Linux support and Steam, which is, I think, slightly above 100 at this point.
It's 300 people.
No, I mean games.
Oh, yeah, it's about 300 games as well, I think.
Oh, okay. But most I think, of them for example, games. I think Mac support is still a bit more prevalent than Linux support at this point, so it's not your entire... You're not going to play your entire catalog right away.
No, most of the big games that will be on... If you have to use Steam on Linux or Steam OS, if you have TF2... Well, everyone has TF2. If you have any Valve game, if you have Serious Sam 3, if you have Metro Last Night...
There are a lot of indie games, of course, that run Linux.
Yeah, there's indie games, but I'm talking like big games that people have heard of. I'm trying to think of others that I can't really think of any.
The Paradox games?
Yeah, if you're into Paradox, then they should support them as well. So, yeah, other than that, there's not much you'll be playing apart from the regular indie games that are based off Unity and stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's not something I would recommend to anybody. I had to spend about 3 or 4 hours getting the thing to work in a virtual machine, and it's supposed to be easier to get a computer up and running than actually doing it in real life. So I can't imagine how it would be trying to do it on a real computer. Probably the same, if not worse. I don't recommend it to anybody. It's an alpha thing, and despite them calling it beta, I would treat it as alpha. And unless it's really going to kill you, unless you use it, I wouldn't bother. But it's nice to see that it's a thing that's happening, I guess.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see where it is in a year's time, despite my occasional ire for Steam.
Yeah, I have to say I'm interested in it. If this works out and they will have nice machines for affordable prices and the Linux support gets a bit better, I could see myself getting one of those things.
Yeah, because it's a great way to just get a PC that will work.
Yeah. It's just that I want something under my... I don't want a gaming PC standing around somewhere and having this under my TV would probably be fine.
Yeah.
And if they get this to work and have machines with good prices, then... But like you said, that's still far out. At least a year.
I want to know if Valve are ever going to sell the controllers separately.
I think they plan to.
That's the most interesting thing, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still have my doubts about it, but...
I have my doubts, but I want to use one.
Yeah, I want to try it out as well, yeah.
It seems like I'm going to be living off Xbox 360 controllers for the rest of my gaming.
Well, you can soon probably use DualShock 4.
But given the choice, I would rather pick a 360 controller.
DualShock is really nice.
They're nice, just I prefer the stick layout on 360.
Ah, okay.
And because I plan on modding my 360 controller so it has one of those... The twisty D-pads that are good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, then it might be fine, but otherwise I would prefer DualShock.
If the controllers are good and they, you know, you can play dual stick games with them and mouse controlled games with them as well. Oh, I will jump on that. So right now. So we'll have to see where it goes. It's definitely interesting and to see how many people jump as well once when SteamOS improves.
Yeah. But like I said, I'm pretty sure they want to sell the controller on their own. It makes sense because it's a controller and people would be able to use it on all operating systems, I would assume. And then Steam would have to rely on... I mean, in big picture mode, they wouldn't have to rely on basically Xbox UI in some form.
Yeah, and not only that, is they've got an install base of 65 million people on Steam, and they could potentially sell one to every one of those. So
yeah, I think it would be really cool if they released it, especially for as someone who uses Steam on the Mac, because sometimes if a 60 gamepad works with games, sometimes it doesn't. And if you basically have a Steam controller, I would assume a lot of developers would make sure that it also works on all operating systems.
Well, even if it doesn't, the Steam controller is designed to emulate a mouse anyway. So
oh, that's true. Yeah. Then there you go. So that would be pretty cool.
Aside from that, there hasn't been much going on, really.
Not really. We already talked about Battlefield being a mess. I guess the most interesting things have been the NPD numbers.
Are we skipping me?
Wait. Oh, you're there. We weren't sure. Because you've been...
I don't know what's going on with my internet connection. It's been like this for a week. I really need to call it out. But I guess I really shouldn't have jumped in. I haven't really been playing a ton. I picked up a bunch of games with Black Friday, and I finally got all of them now, but I haven't opened a single one because I'm that awesome. I did pick up Payday 2. I did pick up Payday 2. And I checked that out with some friends, and that's pretty fun. Payday is a franchise that kind of knows what it wants to be and doesn't thrive to be anything more. It's extremely rough around the edges in like every regard. The shooting's not that great. The AI is kind of stupid. But
you basically can't play this game with the AI. It's basically, you have to play it with friends.
Oh, I mean AI in both directions, though. The cops are pretty stupid.
Yeah, like, they do a lot of looking at walls and running at you.
Yeah, they pretty much all run into a door and they stand still. Yeah. They don't really try to flank you or anything. I'm using the technician, so like one of my things is not the remote mind, but like the proxy mind. And I'll put it across my window and you could see it jumping in, and they'll jump in like three or four at a time, detonated or something like that. I don't mind because it's fun to do, but they aren't the most intelligent group. I like how it's, you know, I like how like each crime has like, yeah, granted it's pretty much the same thing. Because you're going to go to a jewelry store, you're going to go to a bank, you're going to go to a store, you're going to try to use the drill. The drill stalls out like every 30 seconds because they need you to do something. You're on a mission other than shoot cops.
Well, you get upgrades.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it depends on how you look at it. Like right now, I guess they really want you to focus on one tree because right now it's really slow. And I don't like the fact that your skills are tied both into your rank and you have to pay for them.
Yeah, it's kind
of that was also. I played the beta of the game, and I also thought that was a bit weird.
That's the biggest gripe I have with the game, really, because it basically, because of that, it kind of forces you to do the harder difficulties, and I don't have any fun playing on very hard or overkill, because not only do people demand more of you on those difficulties, but you go down very quickly, and I just don't find that fun. You know, I have enough trouble getting on with people when playing that game as it is. I don't want to play with people that know exactly what they're doing and expect me to know exactly what I'm doing, even though I'm only like level 15 or something.
Well, I thought the beta I played with people who actually did know what they were doing, and it was actually fun. A lot of people were actually pretty forthcoming most of the time, since it's a co-op game.
Well...
And
In the actual proper release, that's not the case anymore.
Okay.
What is it? There's one heist where you have to steal paintings from an art gallery, right?
Okay.
And it tells you that you need at least 4 paintings to get, but you can go and steal more if you want. We were on 3 out of 4, and nobody had any ammo or any ammo bags, and there was one guy in the art gallery still, and he was just like mulling around doing nothing. And he came out, and he was standing around the van. He's like, "What are you doing? You need to go back and steal that last painting because we can't do it." And I ended up just leaving the game because the guy just, you know, and like a lot of the time, you know, I tell people I don't know what I'm doing, so tell me what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'll follow you. And they just kick me. It's like, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, okay, that's
tricky. I was going to say the difference with me, I guess, is that I specifically bought this to play with 3 other friends. So there's 4 of us in a group, and we kind of, well, I mean, it's people I know in real life, anyhow, it's friends from college. So we all know each other. So we all play for fun. So it's kind of, we don't care. Like when we get down, like, yeah, we want to complete the mission, and we played one like 3 or 4 times to finish it, but we don't get upset at each other, and you guys kind of aren't together because we just started and we all played together. So nobody's over leveled or anything like that. We're all kind of on the same basis, and we all took a different skill tree to make sure that we were kind of well rounded as a team.
That's actually great, because as soon as I'm not quite sure what the class type is, but as soon as one of you has the stealth abilities, you can do some really cool stealth missions. Basically, don't alert the cops at all. And that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I was also going to say, I like that, but sometimes it does seem like alerting the cops is random. It is nice that there are several elements to it. Like, you can get away without alerting the cops for quite some time. Like, there was one mission where you are breaking into a jewelry store, and the first time we did it, I accidentally walked in front of a camera without paying attention, and I guess the bodyguards were back, and we took them out, but we didn't realize once you take them out, you actually have to answer the radio as well.
Yeah.
So by the time we started to answer the radio, that's when he got suspicious and called. I think, again, also like the fact that your money's tied into the other, it's also tied into purchasing weapons, so it's kind of like you can't do both at the same time.
Yeah. They put far too much reliance on money, like,
I didn't mind it because, I mean, it's all about heist, and there's a certain risk-reward mechanic tied to that, but the skills probably shouldn't have been tied to the money, I think.
Yeah, I get that, but at the same time, unless I'm missing something, it also doesn't seem like your money, like what you do on a heist, too much matters. Like there are heists where, you know, like, it's like, you know, like rob a bank and take 4 bank bags or whatever, but if you take extra money, like, that doesn't go towards you, that goes to the overall mission. And then you just get a piece of the total.
Yeah, of course you only get a piece because you are part of a team.
Yeah, but what I meant is like
yeah, there's 2 kinds of money. You don't get the complete amount of money. There's an offshore account.
Yeah.
Which is something you don't get, but you do get more if you steal more overall. Okay. Definitely.
Yeah, so,
and yeah, so what I want to tell you is you can definitely stealth missions completely. The jewelry heist I did without ever alerting the cops or anyone actually knowing we were there, which is pretty cool that you can do that. And there are apparently even more missions that allow stuff like that.
Yeah, I do like that it offers up a variety. The original was fun, but this, you know, like, this, you know, like, granted, some of them are like robbing a bank, robbing a jewelry store, which is basically the same thing. But there was one where you went to a mall and it's like create $50,000 worth of property damage. And yeah, it's just like you kind of shooting up stuff and throwing up stuff. That was fun.
Yeah. They have some pretty good mission design.
The only problem with the mission design is they don't have enough feedback to the player. Like that one where you have to destroy $50,000 worth of stuff.
It doesn't tell you.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I was true. Like, is what I'm doing correct? Am I supposed to be doing something else?
Yeah, that's true. That's something, if they make a third one, which maybe they will, from what we heard, the game was already profitable on launch day, so.
Hopefully.
Something I wanted to ask you guys also about the game, because I only played the beta, so I didn't get to hear all of it, but I thought the music in the game is pretty fantastic.
The music is very good. Yeah. The quality in the beta carries on throughout. It's very good, and I actually considered on buying the soundtrack a couple of times because.
Oh, is it available?
Yeah, but you need to own the game. If you buy it off Steam, obviously you need to own the game first. Damn. You might be able to get, if you look on Overkill's website, there may be an alternative link for it.
Yeah, maybe like Bandcamp or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's the same guy who, for example, also did the music for, like, Bionic Commando Rearm, stuff like that. The music is just fantastic, I think.
Yeah,
it really fits the vibe of the game.
Yeah.
Has some nice nods to, of course, Heat and stuff like that. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other game I've been playing a bit of, and I've been taking my time with because it's a 5-hour game. It's not that short. But there's Zelda Link Between Worlds. And I liked it, but I don't love it as much as people seem to want me to love it.
Why is that?
Because I feel like I get what they were doing with the item systems, and I think it's a novel idea, but I feel like the game is kind of hurt by that because nothing ever really, like, you know, like with the 3D, the console Zelda, you kind of know what every person has to have because they have to beat the dungeon before it. So you can kind of ramp up your dungeons and make them more intricate when you have more equipment that you can use. You know, like some weapons don't get repeated, but, you know, like Skyward Sword, for example, out of those weapons were used constantly because they only gave you a handful of them. Where this just kind of assumes you have one weapon and the dungeon's designed around that. Which makes for some cool puzzles, but it's so samey by the end of it. It's like, oh, here's the sand rod puzzle. That means I'm going to have to lift up the sand and find some way to walk across it. Or use my ability to walk into the wall, walk around and go to the other side. Or here's the ice here's the fire dungeon, so I'm going to use this ice rod to melt something. Or to hit a switch that I can't touch. And it's like, yeah, this is kind of cool. And it makes, but it's like, I wanted a bit more variety in what you have. Like, you can pretty much return weapons you have after every dungeon and really not miss out on much. You know, some exploration on the overworld. But just the notion that, like, every dungeon has a specific item associated with it just really makes it seem. Like, there was one dungeon that I completed that didn't have any weapons associated with it. So it wasn't really anything. It was just, like, you have to use your, I don't even know what you call it, like, your merging ability. And that was pretty much the dungeon, which was fine. But it was also... I assume you both played it into the past.
For 5 minutes.
Okay. In Link to the Past, one of my favorite dungeons in it is kind of this dungeon in the forest area where you kind of go in and out of the dungeon and it connects with the overworld. And that's pretty neat. And this game tries to replicate it. And I feel like this one just doesn't come off as well. Because it's like, oh man, we did that awesome dungeon in Link to the Past. Just do it, redo it here differently. And it's like, yeah, this isn't really that special. It's like, oh, I just fall in and I end on this higher place, and oh, I just use my merge ability. Here we go again. So, yeah, I think it's a good game. It's fun. It looks nice, but I don't, you know, like Polygon calling it the best Zelda game in 20 years or the Zelda game we deserved. And yeah, I mean, I haven't finished it yet, but right now I don't see how this would be better than anything like Wind Waker or Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword for me.
I mean, I know you just said that for you, but the argument I keep seeing is that, the argument I saw put forward by a guy on YouTube named Pro Jared or DM Jared, one of the two, he said that he prefers, like, since Ocarina of Time, Nintendo seemed to go all combat focused with the Zelda franchise, and it just didn't sit well with him at all. And, like, the reason why he's saying it's the best one is because they've finally gone back to doing, you know, a dungeon puzzle-based Zelda purely instead of trying to one-up their combat mechanics all the time.
And this is something that I've said before, and this is why one of the reasons I've always hated the Zelda fan base, is because you ask any 5 fans what they want in a Zelda game, you'll get 20 different responses. So when people say, like, this game doesn't evolve, or this game copies this game, or this game is so stale, it's because nobody knows what they want. I want a Zelda game that kind of evolves over the course of the game, and I feel like this game doesn't deliver on that because it has that item system, which I think is novel. I think the idea of being able to do dungeons certain ways is cool, but they need to find a way to give you either more weapons early on, or a way to kind of say, okay, we're going to hide some stuff in this dungeon that you can't access until you have this other item or something like that.
Well, they could quite easily do that. They could have like a Metroidvania type approach where all the dungeons have specific areas that you can access with specific items, and you need to do all of those areas in order to get to the end, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, that also kind of goes back into the Phantom Hourglass, which had the central dungeon, which is kind of like that. As you got more equipment, you went back, and you got, you know, you were able to further access more of that. So,
God, yeah, I hated that. That was so annoying. The game.
I was about to say, they have shaken up the Zelda formula often, but oftentimes it's not necessarily what people. I mean, I guess it's not necessarily what I want, because I also hated Phantom Hourglass for that, where it's like it made sense. It went for that Metroidvania, like the more items you get, the more you can open up and explore this dungeon. But after going back to it the third or fourth time, it's just like, I've been through this part already. Just make me skip it, because nothing changes. The enemies don't get harder. You get more powerful. So I think, you know, people want that open world Zelda. People want that quote-unquote Dark Souls Zelda. And I kind of want it to be more. I love the puzzles, but I don't see the problem with the puzzles in something like Ocarina of Time or Wind Waker or Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword. So even like
I personally never had a problem with the progression that Zelda games have. The problem I always had was that they kind of rely on one form of progression and then repeat that progression over multiple games because they always had the same kind of items. And sometimes even the same kind of item progression, which order you got them.
Yeah, and that's kind of what this game kind of tried to shake up, and it does work. But I mean, even still, the first three weapons I got were the bomb, the arrow, and the boomerang, because those are the Zelda staples. Mm-hmm. And the rest of them are cool, but it's like those are the ones you always want to use, because those are the ones that always have in Zelda games. Yeah, there are some cool ones, and they do mix it up. I feel like at some point, and I think I say this with the Mario franchise as well, at some point, just take, because there have been dozens of weapons introduced in Zelda, just take all the best ones, bring them back, and just kind of build the game around that. Maybe do it the opposite of this game. Give you everything at the start of the game, so this way you have all the tools of the trade at your fingertips, so that they can go buck wild with the dungeon and overworld design.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my between worlds impressions. So now we can move on to news. And it was a quiet week, but we're really just going to touch on two things really quickly, because we still have to do our Game of the Year countdown stuff. The first one was the NPD numbers. And, I mean, there isn't much of a story here. The PlayStation 4 and Xbox One did well. The Wii U's in very desperate situation. And the 3DS...
It's doing absolutely Dreamcast numbers at this point.
Yeah, and the 3DS isn't doing horrible. It's not doing terrific.
For its price point, it probably should do better.
It should be doing better with Pokemon, but it's not doing horrible, I guess.
No, it's fine. It's probably what we can say.
Yeah.
You wait for the... I reckon the 3DS will shoot up for December's NPDs. Because Christmas.
Maybe.
Yeah. But, I mean, people were kind of also having that hope with... November to the Black Friday and stuff like that. There were a lot of deals to get like $150 and stuff like that. And with the 2DS on the market, and that was $100 as well. Other than that, what was the big takeaway from the NPDs? Anything else?
Other than that, I thought what was interesting was the split between games, third-party games. A lot of the third-party games were mostly bought on PS4, even compared to the last gen counterparts.
I this sounds horrible, but I would also say it's launch and it was a week difference, which is a big thing for launch. Like, if that continues over next month and the month after when they're on the market for the same period of time.
I mean it compared to Xbox One. I thought it was way more interesting compared to the last gen versions of those games.
Oh, you make Assassin's Creed 4 sound better on the PS4 than the
PS3 or Xbox 360, for example.
Now,
or,
was that
or Need
was
for Speed, that... or Need for Speed, for example, it's the same thing.
Okay, just was Assassin's Creed in general or for the month?
I think for the month, but Need for Speed came out at the same time for all.
Yeah, Need for Speed, I get, but Assassin's Creed, I think, was partially the month before as well.
Yeah, I think Assassin's Creed came out end of October, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yeah.
The, well, they had 1 week more, probably, I think.
Which is, well, I mean, 1 week is a very big thing in this industry when everything's front-loaded.
But Need for Speed, for example, was a big difference. I think it was like 6% on PS4, around that.
Yeah, I also want to say, I'm not taking away anything from it. I'm just pointing that out. Yeah. But also, if I'm not mistaken, software was down big this year, wasn't it? Wasn't it like 10 or 15%?
Yeah. Software was still down. Hardware up. Shocker.
25%? Well, I mean, if hardware wasn't up, that would be very sad.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, hardware. But software being down 25% is a weird story. Also, MPDs are going to become really boring this generation if it's because I mean, this entire list is mostly platform titles.
Yeah. I mean, is that really surprising?
No, it's
because
not surprising.
There aren't any exclusives really. That's
well,
why.
There was a ton of them. I expected. I mean, like some, you know,
but
granted, it was.
You have a small install base, and exclusive titles will always sell less than a title that comes out on 5 platforms. It's just math. It works that way.
Not to mention, like, people were more hyped for things like Assassin's Creed and Battlefield more than they were Killzone and Rise anyway, so, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the big takeaways. Like, December should be interesting to watch. The other thing, the other big story of this week, and I'm really not sure the entire thing, because I feel like a jerk, but I really don't follow the YouTube gaming scene, but there was a big... Oh, I guess YouTube is cracking down on content creation, and a lot of game publishers are caught in the middle of that. Well, I guess, say, caught in the middle, it seems a really nice way to put it. Some of them are on the side of YouTube, some of them are on the side of the consumer, and some of them just don't seem to care either way. They just want... They're in the middle.
Yeah, well, the problem is that YouTube introduced this content ID system, which is basically an automated system which scours the videos everyone uploads for matching either visual or audio. At the time, it seems like most videos that get caught is because of the audio. And what that means is as soon as, for example, you upload a video of what was a prominent example? I'm not quite sure right now. Anyway, let's see you uploaded a video of playing the single player of Battlefield 4. I don't know. And you make a Let's Play or even a review. It doesn't really matter. The Cotton ID system may recognize a piece of music and says, well, this might be content you created under fair use and stuff, but because we recognize this as content ID, we block you from basically making on any money of the video you created. And that's actually a big deal. They don't block the videos, but they block you from actually making money with this video. And this is happening on a very, very large scale, and a lot of people are actually affected by it, even prominent people like Angry Joe and stuff.
And there's a lot of false claims as well.
Yeah, that as well.
People are claiming content that isn't actually theirs. Like, for example, if you have... If, let's say I'm an independent developer and I make my own music for my game and then I go and sell that soundtrack on, for example, cdbaby.com, CD Baby automatically upload most of the stuff that they carry to this YouTube Content ID system. And then, so YouTube, somebody, let's say Martin makes a video of my game and the YouTube Content ID system picks the music up, it will then say to Martin, CD Baby owns this content in your video, you can't make money off of it. And I'll go, hang on, wait, no, that's my content. I host it, or I sell it on CD Baby, they have no rights to it. And, you know, but I want Martin to make money off of my video, you know. So it's not only just publishers, like you get a a notification from EA or Bethesda, or you'll get a notification from some company that claims that they own the content, a specific content, piece of content, when they don't always do that. So it's a bit ridiculous, and it's what always happens when you have massive automated systems like this. And to be honest, it kind of concerns me. Like, I've been considering doing a Let's Play for a very long time, and I don't think I'll bother doing it now because, you know, I mean, I've already sort of weighed up in my head how much effort I want to go when it comes to making it. And if I'm just going to, I mean, I can monetize my videos, and I have a couple of videos on YouTube that don't get any views monetized already. And I think, I'm just thinking that, you know, if I go to all this effort to make a video on Halo, for example, because that's the game I was going to do a Let's Play of, and I was going to replay that game, like the PC version, at least twice, and the Xbox version of CE Anniversary to do it, as well as doing commentary over it and analysis on how the game works. I'm just thinking now, like, what's the point if I'm just going to have to, you know, if I'm going to probably get flagged because I decided to use this, because I decided to use the game soundtrack or show a particular cutscene in the game, and
then you don't even know if you try to actually do something about it, if it will actually work.
First of all, let's say I get hit with a claim, I can say no, that's wrong. This is fair use because it's commentary, but it could take up to 30 days for someone to get back to me on that, and they could just say no, we're still going to keep this claim on, and then I have to go through another appeals process, which will take another 30 days, and by which time nobody may be even interested in the video anymore. So I've lost my monetary rights on that video for potentially up to 3 months, and there was no point in me uploading the video. So yeah, it you know, it's very concerning that, you know, Angry Joe has been hit with this on about 60 of his videos, which is insane.
Yeah, because he doesn't produce a lot of videos, but a lot of long videos.
Yeah, and
so that means a lot for him.
And yeah, he reduces, and obviously the longer the video you're going to have, the higher chance of getting flagged you have. And he has half an hour of videos a piece, and all of his videos are under fair use, because that's all he does is criticism.
Yeah.
It's insane, and I was debating doing this LP for a very long time, and it's kind of upsetting that now I don't really have a choice in it. And YouTube has just said, nah, there's no point.
And some people are already leaving YouTube. I mean, Classic Game Room, you made me aware of that on Twitter, but Classic Game Room said, well, that's it. We're now just only on our own website and putting videos up on Dailymotion.
Yeah, it's really sad as well, because Mark from Classic Game Room is the coolest guy. You know, if I could meet this guy in real life, that would be awesome, because, you know, he just does reviews, but he's really funny. You know, he tries to see the best in everything. He doesn't like to hate things, you know, and you know, he's spent a long time on YouTube doing this, and he's very good at what it is that he does. And you know, he puts a lot, you can tell that he puts a lot of money into you know, his show, because if you look at the set, man, I wish I had a room like that.
All those arcade machines.
Yeah. I wish I had something as awesome as the Intergalactic Space Arcade. But, you know, it's really sad to see that that somebody like him, who's, you know, who's probably the nicest guy, and he's had to host from now on most of his videos on Dailymotion and having to drive people to his website, which, if you ask a lot of people, is not an easy thing to do, because obviously people are just going to go, well, I'm on YouTube, why should I leave?
Exactly. That's the point. I mean, some people say, well, whatever, he can do his stuff elsewhere, but a lot of people are only aware of him because he is on YouTube, and that's where I saw him, and it's convenient because they have their subscription there and all for all the other stuff as well. And of course, YouTube has a large user base, so the amount of money you can actually make is also, of course, higher. And it's good for him to have more money, because that makes his production easier. And so even if a lot of people go with Dailymotion, it's not going to be all of them. And I'm not aware how the monetization on Dailymotion works, and if the payout is as good as on YouTube, so I don't know.
And it's really sad to see that YouTube has a very... I mean, I'm not surprised, but it's sad to see that YouTube has such a laissez-faire attitude about it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you could question whether these are, like, worthy livelihoods, but, you know, it still is somebody's livelihood, you know? And as I saw, I'm not a fan of Dan NerdCube, but he said he was told by somebody that he was stupid for basing his entire livelihood on, like, a different company. Well, that's what happened when he got a job and that company was made, you know, went bust. It doesn't matter where you work. You're basing your life off of somebody else's company, and that could disappear at any point in time. It doesn't matter whether you work for YouTube, work doing videos on YouTube, or you work as a software engineer at Microsoft, or, you know, you do a real job, you know? I say real.
Both are real jobs. I hate
They're all real jobs. They're,
because
they
are creating some form of content for you to enjoy, and that's a job.
Yeah.
They're putting a lot of effort into it.
It is, and I'm not going to necessarily agree with the people saying I hate the concept of real jobs, especially in this day and age where we have people who make millions out of their basement or whatever. But it is kind of a weird business practice to expect to make money off of other people's properties because...
They are not just making money off other people's properties. They are critiquing it.
Here's the way I see it. When I watch Classic Game Room, right, I do not give a single fuck what it is that he is reviewing. I am watching it for Mark because he is awesome, right? He's reviewed games that I have not heard of and games that I really don't like and games that I really do like. And I don't care what it is that he has to like, what game it is, because, you know, I'm there for what he has to say about it. And the same goes for Total Biscuit, the same goes for Angry Joe, even people that watch PewDiePie. They're there because they want PewDiePie, not because they want the game that he's basing his video off at that point in time. And also, if it was I don't agree with the whole it's somebody else's property, because if we compare it to music and movies, right, if you put a music track up on YouTube, you can experience everything that music track has to offer from that video, right, because it plays the entirety of the track. The same goes with movies, and that's fine. I understand them wanting to crack down on that, but gameplay, I am not going to play a game the way PewDiePie will play a game, and I will not play a game the way Classic Game Room or Angry Joe or Total Biscuit plays a game. You know, I can't experience the gameplay from a YouTube video. I can get an impression of the game itself, but I can't understand exactly how that game is. Because I've seen games on YouTube, and I thought, that looks pretty cool, I'll play it. And I went to play it, and I hated it, because I don't like how the game actually plays. So I don't think there is I don't think there's a good argument for any of this, because, you know...
Well, I'm not arguing for it, or, you know, being, you know, I'm just pointing out and we also are in an industry who have spent the previous generation blaming everybody but themselves for poor sales, and I imagine this is just another one of our games aren't selling well because people can watch other people play it on YouTube's completion.
But it's not even publishers that are on this.
It's just a thing that YouTube just decided. It's just a switch. Yeah. It's just the thing is just a switch that YouTube turned on, and obviously Nintendo's incredibly happy, but, you know, obviously it's more work for Deep Silver, it's more work for Bethesda, it's more work for Ubisoft, it's more work for Capcom, you know.
Who all of them have basically said that, no, you can make money off our games, and it's not an issue at all, because it's actually beneficial to people seeing these games. And now they have, like, Dennis had all this work on their hand, because they basically have to be on Twitter and say, okay, send us all these claims and we will see to get all the stuff reversed. Just because this is a great idea.
That's why I was kind of curious to see how this would be a cost-effective measure for any publisher. But I imagine part of this isn't just video game. Part of it is also other industries who want to crack, you know, I know Viacom's a huge company that hates YouTube for that reason, and anything with Viacom gets taken down instantly, almost instantly. Same with award shows, sports. WWE's really terrible with that. like if you ever want to search out wrestling videos on YouTube, you should do it in reverse, so that the, because that's what people used to do, either reverse it or you kind of mess up the audio so that it wouldn't track it.
Yes, and I do know that if you invert the image, if you invert the mirror the image, YouTube Content ID system can't pick it up, which is the stupidest thing.
Well, I mean, I imagine it's because somebody gives you a clip and you're not
I know, but like, it just sort of it kind of highlights how ridiculous this whole situation is. Like, it takes like a minute in a video editor to do that, you know. And there you go. You've pretty much secured your way to get past the system. And the fact that, you know, people have been receiving claims from THQ, which is a company that doesn't exist anymore. You know, that's how ridiculous this entire thing is. You know, and it's just a shame because, like I said, it's put me off. And if it's put me off from making videos, how many other people is it going to put off?
I was actually super excited about maybe doing some videos with the PlayStation 4 because now can do it and it doesn't have YouTube support right now, but I thought, well, maybe if it has in the future I could do some short things with it. Now I'm probably not going to bother.
Yeah. And it's
you
just
need to work on your board game feature.
That's true.
But yeah, I'm kind of like this is an evolving situation. It is something that has been talked about all week. Like you said, a lot of developers and publishers were kind of caught with their pants down. So a lot of people are still trying to work out their policy on it. Some companies are pretty forward with not supporting it. Well, some are forward with not supporting it. Others are like, yeah, you can make videos as long as you don't make money off of it, like Nintendo. So yeah, it's going to be curious to see. And I imagine over the course of the next couple of weeks and years to come, people are going to evolve and you'll probably just see less of those games being covered. I imagine at some point this might lead to some type of legal battle to find a determining internet fair use policy, because that is not something, it's not something that we historically have any precedent for.
And it's something that's long overdue as well.
It's also mostly something that's sadly based on US, right? Because YouTube is a US company. Because if YouTube would have been based, let's say, here in Germany, this system wouldn't exist.
Yeah, I was reading about...
It's more about how fair use works over there with you guys.
Or doesn't.
Yeah. money talks. I was for some reason, I was curious because I was talking to a friend about public access characters yesterday. And I was wondering why Mickey Mouse wasn't, because Mickey Mouse is almost 100 years old, and apparently Disney lobbied for that to be changed every time
Disney's
it comes
falls.
Up.
I think the two major lobbyists for the extensions of copyright are Disney and Paul McCartney.
That's true.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Or Cliff Richard, or was it Cliff Richard? I think it's more likely to be Cliff Richard than Paul McCartney.
You sure? I thought it was Paul McCartney.
Well, Cliff Richard is older, so...
Maybe, yeah.
No, I think it's Paul McCartney, because I think I remember reading it was the Paul McCartney bill or something like that, that they joked, like, it passed in, like, 98 or something like that.
Maybe.
But yeah, it's actually, that is where we are right now, with money... And it's more important than any type of ethical standards, I guess. But like I said, it's an evolving situation. I'm really curious to see how it plays out. But just, I guess, really quick, we're going to go through our games of the generation countdown for April and June, April through June. And lucky enough for us, it was really
you mean game of the year or game of the generation?
No, game of the year.
Okay.
So yeah, these are just games that came out during April, and any that kind of stick out as potential Game of the Year material. So just kind of a refresher.
I really like Guacamelee, I have to say. That came out on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita. I'm not sure on something else at this point. Which
Age of Empires 2 came out the same day.
Not yet. I think it's... Isn't it published by Sony?
Yeah, no, because it wouldn't be on Steam then, would it?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's probably still coming to Steam. It should. Wait, I'm pretty sure.
It is on Steam.
It is on Steam?
Yeah. It's on GOG as well.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Guacamelee is really cool. 2D based Metroidvania with a luchador as the main character. It's really good, really funny.
I really want to play that. I think it was free on PlayStation Plus, or maybe for Europe. And it's there's that. What else did we get? Like I said, it was a really quiet month.
Lego City Undercover?
That was March. Not
last week, 2 weeks. Yeah. Oh, the 3DS version of Lego City Undercover. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No one cares about that one.
Yeah, I hear that's pretty broken and buggy. Not Lego City. Wow. Justice Gods Among Us came out.
That game is really cool.
I'm going to contender for Game of the Year. Oh, well, it's a good thing you waited, because now you can get the Ultimate Edition on your PS4.
Yeah, but it's too expensive for a late port, so no.
Oh, gosh, that reminds me
of... Are you telling me you don't want Tomb Raider Definitive Edition?
No, I didn't want Tomb Raider Definitive Edition the first time around, so... I didn't want that kind of Tomb Raider the first time, so...
But you get to raid a whole 5 tombs in HHD!
And I get multiplayer mod maps, I think. So, yay!
Oh, yay. Everybody's excited about that multiplayer. I guess
Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon came out.
Oh, that's got to be in there. Come on.
I haven't played it, but I know...
You are missing out. You cannot believe. Like, it's Far Cry 3, but so much better than it already was. And I didn't even think that was possible.
Do we have a category for DLC on our thing?
It's technically a standalone thing, so you could argue it's a game. That's my game of the year, as far as I'm concerned.
I was gonna say, because I think something we get to in June as well with News for Wiki U, which is technically DLC, but it's actually a standalone game as well. So, and I'm all for it if it's a very meaty, juicy game. That the only thing was, I was so disappointed because I wanted to buy Blood Dragon, and then I heard it was a multiplayer game at the time.
Seriously.
Thomas was Alone. I've heard a lot of good things about.
Thomas was Alone, but only the ports.
That's only the later, PlayStation ports.
It was great. I have.
Oh, okay.
But yeah.
Was it out this ports. Year?
No, it originally came out last year.
Yeah, on PC.
Okay.
It was last year. Metro Last Light? Maybe? I haven't played it. Daniel Levine?
No, I haven't. I'm not a fan of Metro.
Sadly, I haven't, because I didn't want to play the last-gen version and was hoping maybe they will still do a port. I didn't understand what you said.
I don't know anybody that actually genuinely likes that game.
I played it, but didn't like it.
I don't mind it.
That's not liking it, though, is it? You need to like a game before it becomes Game of the Year. Come on.
Guys. Fuse.
I forgot that game existed.
Yeah, you're in the world.
I as well until I saw it on the list.
Oh, that reminds me. Remember me, because that's not an ironic name at all.
Yeah, that's true. Gunpoint, maybe. I heard a lot of things about Gunpoint. I still need to play it.
Oh, The Last of Us is obviously a contender.
Yep.
That's an actual serious contender. I know it's Jason's contender. It's a game that I bought over Black Friday that I got yesterday that I need to play, so I can argue why it's not Game of the Year.
I don't think it's Game of the Year. I think it's one of those games that, you know, we would have our not Game of the Year. So I think that would be one of the games to go in there.
Earl, you have seen, I think, the three games I favor right now. And even for me, I think Last of Us will probably be in the top three, but probably not over the top.
I think The Last of Us is more important because it tries something different instead of it being a very good game.
I think it is a very good game. Just is not the best.
Yeah, it is good, but I think it's just more important because of what it tries to do than what it actually does.
Yeah, I can see why I would say that. Yep.
Well, like I said, I'm curious to reopen it up and go into it and kind of explore it. And yes, I am going in it with an open mind. I'm not, passing. I'm just making fun. Because Jason's not here this week anyhow, but everybody's been hampering me to play that game for like the past 4 or 5, especially being I haven't played anything on PS3 since February.
Jeez.
I assume people who apparently use Wii U for something other than a dust collector, and the 3DS
really good at collecting dust, I can tell you.
Well, I from my experience, and I mean literally, the system that collects the most dust for me is the PlayStation 3. I don't know what it is about that. I think it's the mate finish, but that thing is just a dust.
Maybe.
And I use it often as a Blu-ray.
I have another Game of Year contender, but I don't know if anyone already played it besides me at this point. Rogue Legacy. Which was really, really good.
I'm not a fan of roguelike games.
It's a Metroidvania with rogue mechanics.
Yeah, that's why I said roguelike.
That sounds terrible.
Whatever. It's a really good game.
I don't know.
New Super Luigi U.
It's not an Xbox 360. It's not Game of the Year. Come on.
Speaking of, I was surprised to see that somebody gave Luigi's Mansion 2 Game of the Year. I did not expect a handout to get it from anybody. Even though, granted, it was Kotaku Australia, so it's a Kotaku we don't pay attention to.
The Kotaku, like 20th of the world pays attention to.
Yeah. Well, I don't pay attention to any of Kotaku.
Well,
this is an upset of Kotaku that.
I can tell you that one of my top contenders is a handheld game.
Oh, yeah, I'm saying there's a ton of handheld games I would put up there. You saw my list already. Attack of the Friday Mine is one of my top games.
The problem is my handheld game is, again, I think a game that no one else on the podcast played.
Yeah, we aren't. Yeah. Project X Zone, another handheld game. I don't think it's going to win.
No, it's also not very good.
I was also going to say, it's also kind of hard sell when you have like Fire Emblem Awakening in the same genre.
It seemed like, from what I gathered from the demos of both, is obviously Fire Emblem Awakening is basically just Advance Wars, which is awesome. And
the other way around?
Project X Zone Cross Zone seems to me that it's just a game where you don't really have to employ enough strategy.
Yep.
It's just a war of attrition.
It's basically all fractional substance.
Yeah.
It's just really cool.
It really relies way too much on fan service and enough on the gameplay.
I'm not good at games like Fire Emblem and Advance Wars and Final Fantasy Tactics, but I at least appreciate that you require to think to do them.
I think that was it for these months. There really wasn't a lot.
Deadpool came out. What? Deadpool came out. They're the best game.
Which one?
The best game. Deadpool.
Deadpool? I don't follow. I'm sorry.
That game for breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, the game that was very most mediocre character action game ever made, but it's supposedly funny, but not very, because it talks about being fun more than it actually is fun.
Okay. Right to Hell Retribution.
Sarcastic. Oh, yes. Are we allowing games that are, so fucking awful that they actually sort of spill over into good? Because they can generate fantastic, hilarious YouTube videos? Or are we just allowed?
Well, those videos are no longer allowed to exist, so.
Oh. Oh, well.
Yeah, but if we had to put up a list with worst games of the year, I think this one would be up there.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
Like a real big pile.
There's not much else other than the fucking pile.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's basically it, I think. from these months.
Yeah, there's a lot of indie games here.
There are some good games there. It's just not games that I would consider Game of the Year. And a lot of ports, I have noticed, came out.
It was like Enemy Unknown came out in June, but it was just the iOS version.
Yeah. Exactly. And the month before, I think the Mac version or something.
Fez Spreadsheet Edition in May.
What do you mean with Spreadsheet Edition?
Well, PC.
Okay, I see. It's a good game, but it's a port.
Yeah.
So, have you played it?
I have, and it's kind of cool, but the map just... Oh my god, the map.
The map is useless.
The map, you ruins it for me.
Yeah, I think that's what I said when I played it on 360.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it had a better map, it would be way better.
Yeah.
It's basically what hampers the game, I think.
It's nice and relaxing, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the figuring out these complicated puzzles and stuff, that's actually really cool, I think.
Yeah.
It's just that if you figured something out somewhere and then want to apply it somewhere else, and then because of the map you can't find the way to get there, that's bad. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, yeah, that's that. Honestly, I don't even know what we're doing for Game of the Year this year. I know it's in January, and that's a thing. I assume we're going to reevaluate some of the categories again this year, as we always do.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week, though, with our look at July through September, which gets a bit more interesting, and probably...
There's also a lot of dead time in there, I think.
Oh, yeah, there is a lot of dead time, but we'll see. Maybe we'll do our backyard challenge, because I don't think we did it this year, because the summer was really just spotty for us. So, and especially being that I have several games unopened, I think that would be a nice thing to do for the end of the year.
And it would be way easier for me now, because I got a load of, I got a ton of games pulled off my Steam account. So,
yeah, I was going to say that, and Christmas usually comes with a couple of games, and it gives you time. Even though it sucks, because Christmas is in the middle of the week this year, so I'm off Wednesday, Thursday, and then work Friday, which is a pain in the ass.
Weird.
Yeah, I would have just gotten 3 days off, but who am I? Because I have The Last of Us, I have Zombie, I have PlayStation All-Stars, Battle Royale. I still need to open up my copy of, not Brink, what is the other, Bulletstorm, there we go.
You haven't played that yet?
No, it's still in the shrink wrap.
That's very cool.
That game is awesome.
Before you touch anything, you should touch The Last of Us, because it's more important than any of these other games.
I'm going to touch The Last of Us first, because it is one that we are going to discuss for the Game of the Year. And one of the reasons I bought it was because Jason kept on harassing me about it, so, yes.
Jason, you are good people.
Anyhow, for Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 125. Thank you. Thank you.